Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Are we on?
How you doing, Leona?
Good. I want to apologize. Hi. I am having trouble. You know something? I'm furious with Verizon. I'm going to have it out with them. I have had a lot of problems with my connection, and they came, they did something, it worked for a while, and then it started up again. So I want to apologize to everyone. We are on the air, and I want to let you know that we have with us today, we have... Hold on one second. We have Lawrence Drank is, and we have is, hold on a second, is Mr. Eubanks on the phone with us, on the call with us?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay, we have on with us Lawrence Drank. We have on with us Madeline. Are you on with us?
Yes, I'm here, Leona. Thank you.
Okay, we have on with us Madeline Colburn. Do you want to, starting with you, Madeline, do you want to introduce yourself and then we can go on with the others?
Sure, no problem. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you.
My name is Madeline Colburn. I'm a chaplain within the Missouri Department of Corrections for the last 27 years. I've been volunteering my time helping families get back and forth to their loved ones in the rural areas, working with general population as well as death row inmates. My current situation right now that I'm facing working with some American Muslims, African-American Muslims that are in this particular facility, they have been targeted by hate crimes by correctional guards. And it was so bad, February the 28th, I've had to contact and get U.S. Representative Cori Bush involved. I've had to get a Missouri American Muslim nonprofit organization involved to help with the matter and the dialogue between the prison system and basically whatever is going to happen with their legal team. The problems in Missouri prison, I basically can say from my time of working from the actual jail medium security institution and working my way through the actual system in itself, dealing with legislators, what I found is that there's a breakdown of communication. A lot of these state legislators that sit on Department of Corrections commission boards, possibly not any of them have walked through any of the facilities. So things that are sent through constituent services in regards to grievances, this is where I come in and advocate, not just as your average chaplain that just go through the facility and pass out spiritual booklets and sit and talk with. I literally get involved with the lives of these inmates. My preference right now that I've been focused on for the last 15 years is wrongful convictions due to the Innocent Project that I'm working and consulting with their investigator on some of the cases that I have personal relationships with both men and women of this particular prosecutor that is no longer alive. So we have some deep issues in Missouri. I'm sure you probably have heard of the things going on in the Midwest, but Missouri right now is really at the top of the level when it comes to the inmates not being vaccinated, and monies was received through the COVID relief from the governor for that specific reason. They have yet to do that. They are not wearing masks as far as staff workers and CMS medical. A lot of the gentlemen that I have come in contact with through email sending complaints, they've noticed that without wearing the gloves, it has caused them to be sick, and a whole wing recently had to be on lockdown. So these are some of the issues that seemingly no one is dealing with on top of knowing that Congress is out of session right now. So it's not really a whole lot can be done other than conversations like this, networking with other nonprofit organizations or individuals that are activists and advocates around the country, that we could collectively come together, have these kind of conversations, and possibly do something outside of government as far as helping these families. That's kind of where I am at, focused on Missouri prisoners and their families, and more so the wrongful convictions that have taken place, trying to get these individuals released.
Thank you, Madeline. Would you like to go next, Lawrence?
Hi, everybody. How y'all doing? Hi, Leona, Jerome, Madeline. Nice to meet y'all. So my name is Lawrence Drink. I did 20 years in California State Prisons. I've been part of the system since 9 years old. I was in currently in 25 foster homes, over 30 group homes, California Youth Authority, and I was released about 5 months ago today. So, and I am an advocate. I'm also ordained. I am a reverend, and my whole goal is just to get the information awareness out there. I started my own business, which was Legacy Programs Education and Reentry, and this is to address the needs of reentry and the needs of the community in order for a safe and successful reentry, and most importantly, a permanent one. And like I say, I point out the what's wrong with the system from within, and I'm just a huge advocate on trying to fix the system one step at a time, starting with myself.
Thank you, Lawrence. Jerome, would you like to go next, please?
Yes, ma'am. Hello to everybody. I thank all of y'all for having me here at this moment. My name is Ronald Eubanks. I spent 15 years in prison. I spent 12 years as a registered sex offender before I was finally exonerated in 2017. I'm a true advocate fighting for justice for all people, not just for me, myself, and I, but for everyone. I feel everyone deserves true justice. I'm an author of a new book called Guilty Until Proven Innocent, When a Woman Cries Rape, the life story of Ronald Eubanks. I'd like to Miss Natalie, I never heard a chaplain speak the way you spoke. You know, I must admire that. I really do, because I don't know about Lawrence, but I never had a chaplain like that. And so my heart and prayers really goes out to you, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all those incarcerated men and women that you have surrounded yourself with. It's truly blessed. I promise you, it really is. What you are doing and the things that you have said is a blessing to them. And for me, too, because my heart is joy when I hear the things that you say.
I would like to say something about Madeline Colburn. Madeline Colburn has been an activist for years. I've known Madeline for years. And Mary Neal, who unfortunately passed away a few years back, have been very instrumental in helping a lot of people incarcerated. And I just wanted to add that. Madeline, you can say what you were getting ready to say. I just had to put that out there.
Well, I thank you so much. And just to touch on what you are basically stating, most of the men that I have come in contact with, even so much the young man, Reginald Clemens, on death row, he's finally got commuted, but he's still fighting for his life. I found that it become a pattern of practice with men of color, African-American men specifically, that are locked up based upon lies from the prosecutor. And I started out with this just to give you a little background. I was going to seminary and did not know what I wanted to do in regards to my externship regarding what I had to do in seminary. It was a Christian seminary. And I ended up being asked by my pastor to go visit his nephew in the facility. He just didn't think that with himself he was called to prison ministry. And because I'm a student, you know, I thought, okay, let me go. And I was already ordained as a minister, and I was an associate pastor at the time of our church. So I went. I went to the medium security institution in St. Louis downtown. And the young man had been charged with first-degree murder, ACA. And I wanted to really just talk with him. I didn't care what was on the rap sheet, the Regis sheet. I just wanted to know his heart. And after talking with him, you know, that kind of steered me up. You know, that was really my first real experience of being behind the glass, going to see a family member of our church loved one. And by doing that and seeing the conditions that they were in, and as I'm talking with him, I came in as a chaplain visit. I'm hearing the COs in the back going off on the other people about lockdown, get in yourself. They were just derogatory. And it was cringing me while I was talking to the guy, and I didn't know why I was feeling infuriated. But then it began to, it dawned on me, this is what I'm supposed to do, dealing with injustice. Now, it really gets deeper because I didn't think that just helping out inmates would go this far. Like, I thought I would just go in, then I would utilize this with my class studies and graduate and then move on. No, I was caught in a riot in Housing Unit 4, and based upon that situation and how those correctional guards treated that young man because he refused to eat his off his tray, one of the guys I was with, he was known murder, and he was given life, and he was shackled from ankles to wrists. But we were sitting at the table having Bible studies. When the alarm went off and they called the code to bring other guards in, the fights just broke out everywhere. That was their opportunity to do what they needed to do. And the young man, he ran away from the guards, but they thought the young man I was having Bible study with, he knocked me on the floor, but he covered me and told me to tuck my head in so I couldn't see anything. They thought he was attacking me, then they come and start beating on him. And I'm trying to tell them, the guards, no, he's helping me. He saved my life. That's when I knew. They lied in the report when I told them different, and I had to go to the superintendent to clear that young man on behalf of those COs with their lies and their reports as to why they beat him so bad and put him in adult segregation. So needless to say, I thought that was going to be my end-all, be-all and just acquire my 250 hours of externship, but now it's turned into 27 years. And I can't see doing nothing different than being on the front line, going before legislators, getting in their face, filing lawsuits that I was a part of in regards to ACLU under HJR2 because they were trying to block the religious freedom in the prisons in Missouri. So I became a plaintiff, and that case went to the Supreme Court. These are the things that I've done, not so much just that. I got so fed up, I ran as an independent candidate for governor in Missouri in 2008. And I'm still suffering from doing such because they sabotaged me and they killed me off cyberly, which, you can look me up, Madeline Coburn, CNN. I'm not dead, but all of the federal systems show that I am dead with a code 29 on my name. Now, I'm not familiar with black codes from back in before the Civil War situation, but that still exists because I can prove that slavery was never abolished because I'm civilly dead in the Department of Homeland Security, the Internal Revenue Service, Social Security Administration, and I've been fighting this since 2007. But I know where it came from, but no one's listening. But I continue to stand in the speed for these inmates. I've been given all kind of literature to my house, snitch nigger. I've been given oatmeal with glass shrapnels in the mail come to me. Mail fraud from different people of the facilities working in the mail rooms in the correctional. They won't give me my mail. They won't send out mail from the inmates. So these are some of the gaslighting situations that I've been faced with, all for just speaking the truth and helping these families get justice. And it's hard, and I get it. I understand what they're doing. So I stopped complaining, and I started going outside of Missouri and tapping on other doors, such as dealing with Leona. Yeah. We've been in touch with one another, I know, well over 15 years now. I think I met her when I came back from Africa in 2006, and we connected through an inmate, Thomas Kunz, on the East Coast. And through him, he connected me to her, and that's how we got connected, and now here we are 16 years later doing what we do and have passion for. So I thank you for just acknowledging such, but I just believe being born on December the 6th, 1970, when I did my research, slavery was abolished December 6th, 1876. Now, if in fact that was the case, that means I was 105 years later born but I was born as a freedom fighter. I had to be. If slavery was abolished on that month and day, and that's the day and month I was born on, then I have the duty and obligation to fight for justice because slavery was never abolished. And I'm living proof of that. And you hear me under the sounds of my voice. I'm not dead.
Right.
You can actually find Madeline on the internet by typing Madeline Colburn, deceased.
But that's where we are with Madeline Colburn. You can find her on the internet. Just type in Madeline Colburn, deceased, and you will see this live woman that's talking with us right now is considered dead on all over the place.
But that's where we are with Madeline Colburn. You can find her on the internet. Just type in Madeline Colburn, deceased, and you will see.
I'm sorry to laugh about it. You know, when these things happen in this country, there's nothing else to do but laugh about it.
Exactly.
That's right.
It's just a joke, the whole thing. But I wanted to also, Madeline's been advocating for one prisoner in Missouri especially, but I wanted you, Jerome, to talk about yourself. And we have other callers on the line that I'd like to hear back from. But I'd like to have you talk about your situation, Jerome, because you were a case of the wrongfully convicted, and you spent how many years in prison?
I spent altogether, it was 27 years, but actually behind bars, I spent 15 years altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 10 at one stretch, and then they rearrested me and made me do 5 more for failure to register as a sex offender. And then I was a registered sex offender for 12 years. So altogether, I have about 27 years dealing with the justice system with my falsely convicted. And, I mean, for me, it was a hard road because I couldn't read and write. And I was failed by so many systems, the justice system, the education system. And by the education system failing me, it set me up as a black man to be incarcerated, to go down the for what I went for. And it's just not just me, it's other people. But it to me, I don't necessarily feel that it's all about the color. I think it's a corrupt system that anybody that falls up under his web, that it captures and it crucifies. And that's my feelings about the justice period, but
you know, I
agree
with you. And I want to say, at one time it used to be solely on color. And then
right.
It became solely on people of color plus the lower class of whites. And
right.
Now it's
anybody
anyone in prison. But if you notice, the upper class or the average class white man has better benefits. I've seen it myself, especially working
right.
with the organization and having these clients come in. I see the differences in the sentencing, the treatment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all these things. Now, in Lawrence, since he's been out, Lawrence has been very instrumental in getting the truth out about what goes on in the penal system, you know. And
right.
this is one of the reasons
mm-hmm.
why I have this show going every Sunday afternoon like this is because he brings on others. He talks about others. He talks about the things that people would not normally believe had it not been
mm-hmm.
for somebody that actually experienced it. And Lawrence
mm-hmm.
is a living example, as well as yourself. And then I've had on with us in the past, I've had on Dr. Kevin Dolphin, who was another wrongfully convicted, and I'd like to have him back on again at some point in time. But he's been on. And there's been so many others. Anthony Wilson is another one. He was wrongfully convicted. These are people of color.
Yeah.
But the it's a sad situation when you hear of so many people of color that have been wrongfully convicted, served 20
mm-hmm.
years or more, and there are some that are
mm-hmm.
still in prison who have been in for 39
right.
years. They've been proven innocent, and yet they still sit in the prisons. There's
right.
something definitely wrong with this country when these things happen.
If I may add,
and I want to go back to Lawrence. I want Lawrence to talk more about his experiences and what he saw actually when he was inside. Some of the things he's been, and also I want all of you to tell the audience how they can get in contact with you if they want to help in any way or if they have any questions or feedback, just to let them know how they can reach all of you. And then we can do it again at the end of the show.
Okay. I want to say this. This is Madeline. My email address for anyone to reach me is at Coburn Enterprise, CoburnEnterprise06 at gmail.com. And listening to Lawrence and the other gentleman that just recently got out of jail, I want to be so instrumental in helping you guys. If you could send me an email, let me know what state you're from. What I've been doing in the state of Missouri is helping ex-offenders and offenders that are incarcerated receive their stimulus money. And they got a lot coming. And I've been helping families walk through to help their loved ones, too. So if you guys have not received your stimulus as prisoners during the time you were incarcerated, please send me an email, and I will help you fill out the 1040 EIP rebate form to the IRS so that you guys can get your stimulus that is owed to you, period.
That's great.
On Facebook as of Madeline Coburn, and I can be found on LinkedIn as Madeline Coburn. But that is my email address, and if anyone that you know that needs help receiving their stimulus, please have them send me an email, and then I would walk them. I need to know what state they're in, and I will walk them through getting that, either the form or if they want to do it online, I will help them do that. Thank you, Leona.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to, real quickly, I'd like to ask who, we have a caller, and I don't know if that's Christine or if we have another caller on the line.
It's Christine.
0467?
Yes, Christine.
How are you, Christine? Do you have anything you want to say? And Christine is a longtime supporter of Lawrence Drank. Do you have anything you want to say, Christine?
No, not at the moment. I don't. The pharmacy is listening, so we just wanted to say you guys are doing great work.
Well, you've been a blessing, too, being on the show at times, even speaking for yourself. But I appreciate you being on with us. Now, Lawrence was going to be talking about the situation that he encountered. And, again, Madeline, I don't know if you know it, but as a reverend, but Lawrence actually went to prison for robbing a church, and it was the very pastors that he robbed from that he became very close with, and they're like his parents now. So, Lawrence, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, okay. So I was 15 years old, and I was very stupid, as most 15-year-olds are, and I got the bright idea to burglarize the church. And in doing so, the pastor never turned me in. He accepted me. He invited me to go to Magic Mountain, in fact, a week afterwards. And the church has just been instrumental. So, eventually, I went to YA for, I think it was a juvenile weapon and juvenile institution. I had a shank in juvenile hall, and I was active in a riot. So they sent me to youth authority for that. Through that time, Pastor Carl and Susan and Bethel Church kept me, they kept writing back and forth. Eventually, I ended up in prison at 18 years old. They continued to write and actually got me my typewriter to write for the church. And I started writing these newsletters about prison and bringing awareness and talking about what I was going through. And I started even a youth, letters for the youth, a journaling program to help the youth to know what prison was really about. That because I watch TV and I see how they glorify the stabbings, the violence, but they don't talk about the mental anguish. They don't talk about the emotional distress. They don't talk about the human disconnection. And that's one of the things I wanted to make aware to them that, you know, it's cool when you're on the yard with your homeboys, but when you're in that cell by yourself, you're miserable, and you're really, you think like no other you're like a philosopher. You think like no other. So I did that, and then, like I said, eventually they've been through with me the whole prison term. I got paroled November 24th, and they paroled me homeless. They made me go back to my county commitment, even though I had a home with my name on it. I had a family that was willing to accept me, my wife and my son. I had a job waiting for me. I had everything set up for me, and yet the system said, nope, you go back to your county of commitment. And I was there. I had a stay away order from my victim. I had, it was just all bad. I had nothing in my town of Santa Maria. There was no home, no job, nothing. So my pastor, it just so happens my pastor and his wife were talking and about it. And I think a month before I got out, I said, hey, you know, I might have to go back to Santa Maria. I was just wondering. And they're like, well, how about you stay with us? We'll give you 90 days, and then we'll revisit after 90 days to see how it works out. And so I ended up paroling. I fought to even stay there. They wanted me to go to a homeless shelter. Because of COVID, they had no programs available. They had no transitional housing. So they literally tried sending me under a bridge. And this was a problem. So Pastor Carl, Susan, and my wife, we all fought to get me to stay with them. It eventually, there was success. And I stayed with them for 90 days. And in that 90 days, I created a business. I was ordained. I got involved in my church. I did the very church that I burglarized. I went back and I started fixing things for them. I started, it was rough going back there, but I went back and I made right. So,
these are some of the situations. And I have to say, the audience hears this every week, and I wish that it would even go further to other media outlets, because we have been listening to people, and I say human beings, who have been wrongfully convicted, who have made mistakes due to their childhood or traumas, whatever has happened. There's so many people in prison who were victims before becoming offenders. We also know that a lot of times people are on drugs to hide the pain that they're going through because they're unable to talk about those traumas. So we have been listening every single week. We've been listening over and over again of all the injustices that have been done. And people have changed. They have matured. And usually people from 25 and under, sometimes they say even 26 and under, they do not have that maturity at the time of their crimes. We have to look at some of these things. But I want to focus, like Madeline was talking about, in the prisons, how the COs treated an inmate. I want to talk more about these things, because people in the communities think because these individuals, men and women in uniform with titles, cannot do wrong, no matter what. They hear about them killing prisoners. They hear about them abusing, traumatizing prisoners while they're inside. They hear about them depriving prisoners of everything. They hear about them putting them in solitary confinement and on restrictive blocks, and a lot of times for no reason. But they will tell outsiders a different story. So these things are the topics that we really want to focus on, because I don't care if somebody is in uniform or not, if they have a title or not. They are no different than any other human being. And we have to start looking at some of these.
They get
really
conditioned just like we do as inmates. They get conditioned as COs. They get dragged into the politics just as much as we do.
Right.
I mean, they orchestrate a lot of it for their own safety. You know, we sit there and think about it, about a kid going to prison with grown men with, you know, they stick 18-year-old kids with people with four life sentences that outweigh them by 200 pounds and that have multiple in-house murders, and they put them in the cells together. And they're not supposed to be doing this. They are conditioned. They have a gang mentality just as we do as inmates, and it's based off of survival. They have to put the focus on us to get it off of them because of what they're doing. But let's be honest about the prison system. You know, we've been under COVID. I was in prison during COVID, and we had more drugs and more cell phones than we ever did with visiting. I'm going to tell you right now, there's no such thing as a family bringing in a cell phone or that much drugs to flood a yard like it was when you could just walk through a gate and they just open up your lunch pail and let you go through. So, you know, the system is corrupt. The system, it's easy money. It's fast money. And I watched it. You know, I sat there for multiple COs where if they wanted me to go hit, if they wanted somebody hit, I was that guy. I had no quarrels about it because it was based off of survival.
That's right.
And this is so this is some of the stuff that, you know, and then when the inmate gets in trouble or they don't get in trouble, it's swept under the rug and they're allowed to do this because of their positions.
Mm-hmm.
I understand too. They say there are a lot of good guards. They just don't talk about the ones that their peers who are corrupt. But a lot of them, a lot of prisoners have said it's not so much the guards as it is the officials. The officials are the ones, and they're the ones that tell the lies to the outside. When something happens in a prison, they come out with a lot of these things, telling the media that these things. But where are the body cameras or the videos in the prisons? I recently heard about someone dying in the prison in the community. In the prison, and they said that the person was at fault, but they didn't have any videos to show. You know, and to me, if they don't have videos, then there's something awful strange about it. That's when it should be looked into.
Yeah.
It really should.
Well,
this shouldn't be happening.
And we have to understand that people think that people, when we go away to be rehabilitated, there's no rehabilitation. It's all a scam. It's the money's being misused. It's being pocketed. The rehabilitation is within ourselves and the communities that we
That's
create.
Right.
And depending on the prison and the yard that you go to, you're either going to get it or you're not. And so you're subject
right.
to whatever's going on that yard. If there's violence and if there's a race war going on, you're part of it. There's no, oh, well, I'm a Christian, I'm going to stay out of it.
Nope.
That's crap. You know, you're involved based on your race. You know, and this
right.
is cultivated within the system. Everything's based on race. They have these things called MAC reps that go around, that inmate advisory councils. And they're based on how you get in that position, isn't what you know and what you could do for that community. It's based off race. And those are pretty much the people that the COs go to. So,
right.
you know, we the people that are going in with these problems, they're coming out with a far more longer list than what they went in with. Because, like, today,
exactly.
you know, even though I've rehabilitated myself and I've gotten a lot better and I'm successful, I still suffer from the PTSD. You know, I still suffer
yeah.
from that mentality. I have to sit there and check myself hourly, not daily, but hourly, because of my belief system that this system's created. And it's based off survival. They don't let – there's no – the mass incarceration needs to end. This is not productive for anybody, and it's not fruitful. There's nothing – these guys have nothing to offer society because society says they have nothing to offer.
You know what
and
I'd like to add to that, too, Lawrence, is what you said, the post-traumatic stress disorder or stress syndrome. What they need to start doing when individuals go into prison, whether they be juveniles, whether they be women or men, they need to evaluate them. And then when they get ready to come out, if they have that opportunity, to evaluate them again. Because one of the things I noticed, they tend to diagnose everyone in the prison. So many prisoners are diagnosed with antisocial behavior when, in fact, just like you say, a lot of them end up or have, when they go in, post-traumatic stress disorders. And this is what they need to start doing, and not having a prison psychiatrist, an independent psychiatrist, diagnose these people, evaluate them before they go in. Some of them do go for psychiatric evaluations in hospitals before their trials, but not all of them.
Right.
Well, Jerome, you got anything to add to that?
What you were saying was, in Texas, they do the same thing with the race. They separate us by race, but also in gangs, in cities. You know what I'm saying? So that what they do that so they control the prison a lot better. It's easy to control if you fight each other. You know,
I want to say one quick thing with mentioning race. I notice, and if you go on looking for an inmate, if you go on anywhere looking for an inmate, you're going to find that they're not listing their races anymore. They're not listing them if they're black or Hispanic or Asian or whatever. They're not listing them. And that's something that needs to be checked into. Why all of a sudden they have stopped listing the cultures or the races?
Well, because then they have to be accountable to who's in there.
That's how they
hide. We have a United States Census Bureau who takes census of all these things. How are they going to take census of people going in the prison, their races and genders and all of these things, if the races are not listed? They have their genders, they have their date of birth, they have their facilities they're in, but they don't have their races anymore. At one time they did. And this has stopped within the last few years. And another one is
Not in Missouri, because you can go in the Missouri inmate search, and if you know the DOC number or just type the first three characters, don't even have to know. You just want to see all the C's there in the male facility. It will show you their last name, their first name. It will show you their height, their weight, and it will show if they black, BLK. If they white, it'll say white. So they are. It is right there in Missouri on their inmate search website.
And in Missouri, it has their race?
Texas, ma'am. Texas search, they have the race. I don't know because you got so many different names or the same name, but Texas, if you look it up, you have to put their race on there.
Has anybody looked it up recently?
Yes, I did, because I had to find all of the individuals and make sure with the names that was given to me in the email that was sent to me that was maced by the correctional guards. I had to look each individual up, and that's how I knew, because I was told they were Muslim. So I just assumed, you know, until the email got to me with all the names, they DOC, when I looked it up to confirm it before I sent out information to talk about the issue, they were all.
Now,
but I
would have
known that based on the name and the DOC.
Did you go right to the facility, the Department of Correction website, or did you just type in inmate locator in Missouri?
Yes, inmate locator in Missouri. That's how you get to them. And the website Go ahead.
Okay, and then it show their race.
Yeah, it's abbreviated for black.
I wonder why then some states are not listing them.
Yeah, if you look up Texas,
you know, Dred Scott case ain't never been overturned, so that's free way for whatever they going to do.
Wow.
Right. But you can best believe a lot of things.
Like I said, part of that whole situation of that HJR2 bill ACLU filed in regards to the legal language of this particular Republican senator that tried to prohibit the religious freedom of the inmates praying. It didn't matter what denomination of faith you were. They just didn't want you praying. And it was, I couldn't believe that they were doing that, knowing that that was a federal statute law, that prisoner has rights. And they still move forward and cast that ballot down. And now we're feeling the effects of the situation. Now, the deputy guard over operations of religious programs, the deputy warden tried to downplay it and bring everyone into the chapel and talk with them, both Christians and Muslims and otherwise, to let them know. But he was basically covering for the COs that did it. It's this one particular one. She's an atheist, and she's a known atheist, and we'll let you know that. And she don't want no praying around her. And that's how she exerted her authority and called Code 10-5 to bring others in, thinking that they were going to have to restrain the inmates. And instead of restraining them, they just maced them with the can until it emptied.
Wow.
16 and a half hours they had that chemical agent on them put into the hole. They walked past the medical. They just looked at their ID badge, recorded their information down, and put them in the hole in their T-shirts and boxers.
Okay, I'm looking on a Massachusetts inmate locator, and I'm looking at an African American, and it has his name, the facility he's in, and race is completely blank. This is what we're finding in Massachusetts, with not only this one, but a lot of others. So I would definitely advise some independent overseer in the political arena to start looking into some of these things, because if it's if you can find it in your state, and Jerome Eubanks can find it in his state, then that means something's wrong with this state we're in now. In other states, there's a few other states I've noticed that in too. So they need to look into this.
It's probably something they finna start going to. You can't overlook that. You know, once states start doing something, all of them start to fall in line. Once they see how good it is to hide certain things, they will probably start doing it. It hasn't taken over the states. That's probably what that is.
I am on VineLink right now, Massachusetts VineLink, but I am on VineLink right now, and this is why I say, if like you say, if they get away with it, if nobody notices it, other states will do it too. But I've been noticing it on Massachusetts and also some other states. So if it hasn't gotten to Missouri yet and these people get away with it, believe me, it will get around. It's like Securus. Now, Securus has the video visits. They have the phone calls where you can put money into Securus to talk to your clients or your loved ones. And they have, I noticed the inmates, the prisoners, had different ID numbers with these places than they do at the prison. And I asked Securus why the inmates' ID numbers were different. And they said that it depends on the facility. The people at the prison or the Department of Corrections told them to use those ID numbers. So that's another thing. Are the prisons in Massachusetts and other places, are they making money and they don't want to let it be known by changing ID numbers? There's something awful strange.
I can attest for that in Missouri, absolutely, because based on what you just said, Missouri did give the inmates tablets, but if they want the video conference tablets, oh, they family got to pay for those. They're not issuing those out.
And they're using different ID numbers, which means the public doesn't even realize that the Department of Corrections, they're making all kinds of money just switching IDs around, you know, not putting down races, leaving all these things out. They're making a lot of money. And even the holiday packages, you know, prisoners, I know that I did it one time, and I was told by my loved one not to do it again because they're making money. But they don't allow you to send holiday packages to the inmates, prisoners, unless it goes through their contracted facilities, which is either GlobalTel or Securus.
Yes.
And then when you go through them, you pay like $75 for potato chips, little junk foods to send at Christmas time.
They mark them up.
And that's where they're making money. They mark them up. You can go in a Dollar Tree and buy the same thing for $10 or $15, and here you got these facilities making all this money on these inmates, on these prisoners. And I hate to call them inmates. I keep forgetting. I like to call them incarcerated individuals, but that's the game that the Department of Corrections around the country plays. And if one or two states gets away with it, like you say, Madeline, other states are going to follow through.
Yeah.
Right.
My question is this to the gentleman that recently was released and the other one, I believe it was Florence. What I've noticed of complaints here in Missouri, a lot of the inmates have written grievances due to when they go check the kiosk, they see miscellaneous charges that's been taken out of they funding. And they're trying to figure out where is this $1.38 or 89 cents coming from every month. And they've written many letters of complaints to a constituent service, but no one's getting any answer. But this, I believe, is dealing with the general fund, because they say they pay taxes when they go to the campaign and get their stuff on Tuesday, so there shouldn't be no additional MISC with a charge on the kiosk of their accounts. Now, I didn't found out that it's happening to both male, and I deal with female prisoners, too, and they've noticed by me asking them, just check your kiosk and see if you got any miscellaneous fees on there. And I tell you, they have noticed as well, and they don't know why. If they got money on their books, they charging them that miscellaneous fee for whatever reason. Can you imagine the little 89 cents and $1.38 is adding up with all of the prisoners throughout the state, how much money that is they're taking and stealing from them? Because if there's no disclosure and there has not been no meetings of the minds to where the incarcerated has agreed to such, somebody's stealing. That's fraud under Title 18 USC.
Well, and the prisons have become a monopoly all of a sudden. Everything is within the prison. For instance, the packages, you know, when they get those, there's only, in California at least, there's Access, Union Supply, Walking Horse, and Golden State. Now, back in the days, you could go get a package for your loved one from the food bank. You could get a, you know, from, you could go get a TV from Target or Circuit City before it closed. And, you know, this was gentle on the families. Well, somebody got the bright idea, sitting there saying, well, you know what? Not only are we going to do these personal packages, and then the global telling came in and started saying, you know, the only way you can make a phone call is through the global telling. Technically, that's considered a monopoly. Anywhere in the world, in business, it's a monopoly. But yet in the prison system, it's okay. That makes no sense to me. The families should still be able to go get the personal packages. They should still be able to go get the TVs. Instead, they mark everything up. Now, technically, they're not supposed to mark anything up over, I think, 100% or 200%. The math that they do it, they mark it up, I think, 500% for certain, a lot of the items. Like a Nike shirt that you go out and get for $5, they sell for $30 or $40. A hat is $25 that you can normally buy for $5. The tube of toothpaste that I normally bought in prison, I just went to a Dollar General, and I bought it for $1. And that $1. Usually cost me about $6. So that's, you know, everything's a monopoly. So it's just a lucrative business. Everything is making money in there. And then not only that, let's go into the PIA, Prison Industry Authority. They make the inmates work. We do our own lunches now. Everything's boxed lunches in California. The inmates do that, and they work for $0.60 to $1 an hour. And they have.
And you know who the joke's on? The joke's on the taxpayers, this country, who allow these people to get away with the attacks, the beatings, the deprivations, the solitary. The taxpayers are looking at these people. These criminals, as they call them, these individuals incarcerated as the real criminals, when their taxpayer dollars are going into the pockets of these prison officials and guards and the whole DOC around the country, these people are losing money. This is how sick our own society is, because they are so ignorant of what's going on in their own prisons, in their own Department of Corrections around the country. And they're looking at the prisoners as though the prisoners are benefiting from all the good food, you know, from all the benefits of televisions and all these things. Well, let me tell you, I know somebody whose television has been taken from them, not once, but twice, when they first went in, and then about 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, their televisions are taken. Who's benefiting from those televisions? And members of society are putting all their money into the funding of these prisons that is being used to take from the prisoners and to take from the taxpayers. So who's benefiting but the people, the employees of the Department of Corrections around the country? And we have a society, members of society, that think that they know all things about all situations, when here their money's going out and they're blaming the wrong people from taking advantage of their money. They're blaming the wrong individuals, because it shouldn't be the ones that are incarcerated benefiting from nothing, going in with psychological problems, coming out 10 times worse. That's why I say prisons need to be replaced with long-term residential treatment facilities, where the taxpayer dollars are going to be going to use for something positive and not something negative.
Right.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Well, and the whole prison system as a whole has gotten worse. It's gotten, you know, the food's getting worse. The conditions are getting worse. They got guys living in dorms that were prison or army barracks back in the 60s. CRC, which is California Rehabilitation Center, was built back when Al Capone, during the Depression, or before the Depression, and they're housing inmates there. You know, there's no electric fence. There's nothing. I mean, the floors are falling out. The bathrooms are missing toilets. The sinks are always broken. I worked as a maintenance mechanic at that prison for a year and a half, and I'm going to tell you right now, that's anywhere else they would have shut it down. If that was, they would have condemned it. It's been warned that it's supposed to be condemned. There's, I think, 6 prisons in California, that are so old and decrepit that they're supposed to be condemned, and yet they still keep them open because they don't have anywhere to put these inmates. And so they're housing them out of panic, and they put all this tax dollars into putting, you know, fixing an old heater, but the pipes are messed up. And then they want to sit there and put a new wall, but the foundation's messed up. And so they're like putting Band-Aids on this stuff that, you know, it's not – it's just to keep them in business. They don't care about the safety or the security of us. They don't care about the public safety. They just care about their money and their inmates because, you know, we're worth so much money. So until you start taking away how much does it – somebody needs to go in there and say, how much does it really cost to feed an inmate every day? Because I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't cost no dollar a day. That's ridiculous. It's less than that. If anyone has seen these trays, and there's no way of seeing these trays, the public can't see anything because there's no cell phones allowed in there because of obvious reasons. There's a reason why they don't want cell phones and cameras and stuff like that. We used to have cameras in prison, and they took them out.
Right.
Because people actually got to see what we were living like, where their money's going.
Exactly.
Well, you know, for Texas, man, you know, Texas is self-efficient. You know, we grow our own cows, chickens, and, you know, we plant food. And it truly is a modern-day slavery camp in Texas because Texas don't get paid for anything. We get so-called good time, and that's what they give you for working. And time for working, but they take it at the same time. So, really, they're not giving you anything. And like you said earlier, it's all about the money. But until society wake up and realize what's going on, then the mass incarceration and the false incarceration will continue to happen.
Yeah. Well, and don't get me started on the false incarceration because they'll sit there and know somebody's innocent, and yet it takes them 5 years to let them out. 5 years
let these people out. About 15 or 20 years.
And even that.
Five years.
How does it take 5 to 15 to 20 years to let somebody out for something they did not commit, but yet it took them only 6 months to put them in? And
right.
This is the
because
same
they
system.
Want to make the money.
Yeah.
They're making money. They see money. The whole system, like you said earlier, it's all about money. It's all about revenue. They say slavery built this country. Well, now the penitentiary is building the country.
Yeah. Oh, if you took away the prisons and the income.
The economy, the economy will go down, and so they don't want to do that. Because you got to understand, the prison – all the prisons are in royal area. They're in all the royal area all throughout America. They're not in the city. And in that town that these prisons are in, that's the income for that city, for the people. All the guards, even when Ms. Yonah said they have good guards, she really do have good guards, but they're bad guards because they related to the guard that's doing evil things to inmates. So they don't say nothing.
Well,
so
what pisses me off
as the one that's doing it.
Well, what pisses me off, Jerome, is the fact that you know they always sit there and say, "Well, not all cops are bad." Well, not all people are bad either. Not everyone that's accused of committing a crime is guilty. But yet, they'll take the worst of the worst and then blanket all of us, the middle lower society. But yet, you know, when they do something bad, they say, oh, well, they're not all like that. That's just some of them. So there's a huge double standard with that. I mean, we were just talking about the girl that was raped by two men recently. And I mean, we're sitting there, you and I are talking on the phone, talking about this is really going to mess us up. This is really going to make us look bad because we know the consequences of that. But yet, let's hear about a cop that does a shooting or something like that, and then they say, oh, no, it's just this cop. It's fine. It's not a big deal. They're not all like that.
Right. Well, see, that's the brainwashing process, man. And my heart goes out to that young lady that was in Florida. My heart really goes out to her and her family. You know, I'm so sorry to what happened to her. And I want to say something, and this is heartfelt. I really wish and pray that these young men stop raping these women. I really pray to God that they wake up and realize all they're doing is hurting a real cause. That is all they're doing. They're giving these people ammunition to say, we all bad, we all evil, we all should be just cast off into the land of the lost, and nobody care about us or worry about us anymore. That's all they do when they do the things that them two young men did in Florida. And my heart goes out to that family. And to anybody that basically go through that, because I do not in no type of way
condone
anybody raping any woman. I just don't agree with that none whatsoever. Raping kids and the women, I hate it, and we should put a stop to that because that's an evil thing to be doing to these women.
How about Lowell Prison in Florida, the women's prison, where all those women were raped by the staff? That was a big issue, too. You know something? We have, like you say, there are good people in prison. There are good guards in prison. There are good officials in prison, but there are also corrupt ones, deceptive ones, lying ones. You know, there are bad ones. And this is where I say they need to have independent overseers of the staff. Because unless they have overseers of these prisons across the country, this is going to continue. More people are going to be killed. More are going to be alleged to have committed suicide when they didn't commit suicide. And many are going to have committed suicide because of the treatment that they're getting. Just like with this pandemic, these prisoners are being confined to their cells 22 to 24 hours a day. Who in the world can survive psychologically? That's psychological torture. All of these years, I mean, all of these months, for over a year now, with this pandemic, they've been kept in their cells 22 hours a day, with a lot of them having their belongings taken from them, no religious services at all on Sunday, no way for them to have communication. Now the prisons are starting to not only monitor their mail and tamper with their mail, but they're tampering with their legal stuff because now they're saying the legal is going to go through some chaos on the blocks. They're going to be monitoring that, and now they're talking about paying for video visits, and now I find out the videos are going to be set up on the block where everybody can see the video visits going on.
Wow, I didn't know that.
If we don't do something about this soon, these prisoners are going to be so tightly controlled that they're not even going to be able to communicate with the outside, with their families, and their families are slowly going to be taken, drifting away from them. Somebody needs to do something about this, or we're not. You know, this is the United States of America. This is what they call America. But I'll tell you, they're treating their prisoners and their people in the community, they're treating them as though they were some kind of criminal, what do you call it, terrorist or something. This is the only country. I can't believe that this country is so sick they can't see through this government, this corruption that's going on in this country. Mass incarcerations in America, we're the only country in the world that has mass incarcerations.
And there's something that, you know, I've learned in prison and growing up in the system is about responsibility. And, you know, I am judged by the people I hang out with. And if the COs that aren't doing corrupt things, they need to stand up and say this isn't right and speak out. So, to be honest, yeah, there's good cops and bad cops, but for the ones that don't speak up against the wrong, they're just as guilty, and they deserve
That's
to
right.
be put in, under that blanket. Just like inmates
right.
that former incarcerated, as if we don't stand up and say that we see something wrong with somebody committing crimes, we're just as guilty as them. So
That's
you know,
right.
it
you
all
go to jail for
yeah.
That.
Yeah. So I accept responsibility for the people I keep around me, and for the wrong that when somebody does something wrong around me, I speak up. So it is
right.
my responsibility, and not only that. But when the community needs to speak up and tell the prison, hey, if you want this prison here, we want to know how they live. Let us do a walkthrough. Let the community need to stand up and actually take charge and do something about this and be proactive and say, I want to know what these inmates are living like. I want to know what kind of inmates you have here. And they need to start communicating with the inmate population and allowing them to be humanized, because what
right.
they're doing is they're just locking them up and not caring about how they live, how they eat, or how they sleep. And I think the community, if they raise up and say, we don't want your prison here unless we know more about this, then I think they would actually change it. So it's the community's fault just as much as it is for anyone else.
It is.
That's right.
It is. You know what I suggest? I suggest that people in the community adopt a prisoner. You know, have an advocate, give them a name of a prisoner, write to that prisoner, learn about the prisoner, try to find out what happened, because prisoners don't have a voice. You know, a lot of things that are said in the courtroom, a lot of things that the media says, you know, there's more to a story. There's sometimes three sides to a story. You know, when people commit an offense, say they leave the country, there's a reason. Maybe they feel they don't belong because of their race, they're tired of the racism. When things happen like this, but they have to look. Members of society can't trust the media. We found that out. We can't trust what the media says. We can't trust what they say in court, because the DA, the prosecutor, always is going to try their best to win a case, even if they have to bring in false witnesses.
Right.
They have to tamper with evidence, at least the same thing. There's so much to these prisoners being incarcerated that people don't even know. A lot of them are built up to made to look like they're hardcore, 10 times worse than they are. And I will tell you, there are some serious cases out there, but there are also thousands and thousands and thousands of prisoners inside who have gotten unfair sentences or have gotten wrongfully convicted or have gone through hell because of what the media has portrayed them as, what the DA has done to them, what some lawyers like Zelkind out of Boston and people like him do as lawyers. They're just as corrupt. These people need to be able to see through all this garbage and try to adopt a prisoner, try to write to prisoners, try to learn about them. And they can go on and they can join all these groups on Facebook, all these mothers of prisoners, parents of prisoners, the injustice groups, the wrongfully convicted groups. There's so many out there that they can join to find out more. Get connected with these people. Learn about what's going on in your community and your country.
And this is why it's important for us as advocates to speak out, because 100% of the inmate population are victims of trauma, traumatic events themselves, and emotional trauma that they've undergone. You know, we talk about, Leona talked earlier about being antisocial. You know what? Who isn't antisocial in the community today? You know, this whole pandemic has created an antisocial behavior. So for them to sit there and dub every inmate antisocial and just throw them under a blanket and saying this is what's wrong with you, well, let me tell you what's wrong with the inmate population. Many of us grow up in poverty. Many of us, it doesn't matter what race we are. I grew up in the projects area. I grew up in a gang-infested neighborhood. I became a gang member at 9 years old. So, you know, I became a drug addict at 12, an alcoholic by 12. So let's sit here and talk about who's going to prison. Everybody that's gone to prison has my story. And the ones that don't just haven't said anything yet. But everyone has suffered some type of sexual trauma, some type of physical abuse, some type of emotional distress. You know, and these are the people that are going in the prisons, and they're acting out. They say a violent act is an expression of an unmet need. Let's find out what's being unmet. And when you sit there and you go to the root cause and you find out why these people are committing these crimes, you're going to see that they're more than human than the people sitting in front of their TV going, he needs to go to prison for the rest of his life. These people need help. These people need a voice. And these people need their power back. These people need us. And that's why it's important as advocates to put our life stories out there, to sit there and see what we could do for them, and by being sacrificial lambs. Because you know what? 100% of the MA population is hurting. And 100% of the MA population is being in an enslaved environment. So anyone that says otherwise, they're full of shit. Excuse my language.
No, that's their answer to everything in this country is throw them in prison and throw away the key. That's the only answer. It's like they don't have any other mindset to be able to distinguish, you know, truth from reality from fantasy. They don't have the wisdom or the discernment to know that they need psychological treatment or anger management treatment, or they need, you know, addiction, substance abuse treatment. There's a reason for each and every one of them. Instead of looking at them and categorizing them and trying to get them into a program, a facility, even if it's long term, if it has to be 20 years, at least they're getting the treatment. But to just put them in and throw away the key in some kind of cold, hardcore cement and steel bars and walls and treat them like they're animals. What are we paying the Department of Corrections for? It doesn't even make sense. But that's what the mentality of is of our government and our people in society. Throw them in and throw away the key. But these people in society don't know when it's going to strike them. There's going to be a time when something's going to happen in their own family, and then they're going to see what they did. I had a woman that lived next door to me years ago that lived next in one of the towns that I lived in, and she was so against prisoners. But what happened with her, and this was right in Boston, her own loved one up in Chelsea or one of those towns in Massachusetts did the same thing, killed someone. And somewhere in prison. That's what I'm saying. People will talk about it until it happens to them. And God sees all. God does not sleep.
That's right.
So we need to look at these people out in the communities, out in the even the audience, if they know anybody that's like that, talk to them. Because it can happen to you. It's like lightning. It can happen to anyone, anywhere, and any time.
That's right. Anytime. I say that all the time.
Well, and I just want to let the family members and the incarcerated and formerly incarcerated know that I'm not giving up on this. Like, you know, they can't shut me up. They've shut me up for, you know, 20-something years of my life. At this point, you know, we're going to do what we can, and we're going to go above and beyond to do what we can. And we're going to raise an army. And Jerome's part
of it,
and Madeline's part of it, and Leona's part of it. And eventually, we're going to get to where we need to be. So I don't want anyone
That's
to
right.
lose hope, and I don't want anyone to sit there and say, well, my voice doesn't matter. You're damn wrong that your voice doesn't matter. Your voice matters. You are part of a puzzle that you fit a piece, and that we're going to make this big picture a reality.
That's right. I mean, you know, for me, man, you know, I can't speak for all the rest of the people that have been exonerated, and I know a lot of them is happy, you know, and I like to tell everybody in the whole world that I'm happy, but I'm not happy. You know, there's nothing to be happy about when there's so many other innocent people like me that's still behind bars. What do I have to be happy about? You know, it shouldn't feel good to walk around free, but there's nothing to be happy about because there's plenty more like me that's left behind that nobody cares about. But I care, and I will always
care.
You
have feelings. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there in the communities that don't have the kind of feelings you have. But not only do you have the feelings, but you also experienced it, so you know what it's all about as an innocent person. And if that doesn't reach someone's heart, then something is definitely wrong with our society.
And I live with the society that turned their back on me. No matter who I went to, no matter what church I went to, no matter who I asked for prayer. When they found out I was a sex offender, they all flee from me like roaches fleeing from the light. And I understand. I really do. And I just don't want that to happen to nobody else. And I really wish and pray that society will wake up and realize what we are doing to people, that these are human beings. We are all God's children. And we need to wake up and realize what we are doing to each other.
And I want to say something about churches.
You need to start loving each other.
I want to say something about churches. Like it says in the Bible, not many are called, but few are chosen. And not everyone that says, Lord, Lord, is going to make it. And we have a lot of people in these churches that talk about, you know, preaching the right things to the right prisoners and everything else. They need to. They're like the Pharisees and the Sadducees in the days of the scriptures, in the days of the Christ. They're like the Pharisees, man, like they said, do as they say, not as they do. Because if we had people in the churches that were true Christians and sincere about what they're doing and serving God, then they would be in the prison somehow, going into the prisons to meet with these people on an individual basis if they have
to. Right. Yeah.
But these
and
people
you know,
that preach and don't do, then they're, to me, they're nothing. I'm a Christian.
I'll
do whatever I can. But I've been in a lot of churches. I've been in a mosque. I've been in a synagogue, Seventh-day Adventist, Methodist, Baptist, Pentecostal. I've been in a Catholic church. I've been in Kingdom Hall, a Jehovah's Witness church. You know what? Until I start seeing them actually do something, I don't want to hear what they talk about. Because
That's
like
right.
it says,
That's, I'm like, That's right.
those who visit, those who go into the prisons and visit, and it says that right in the Bible scriptures. And all these people that are preaching and not doing, to me, are not worth anything.
Well, it's funny you say that, Leona, because the other night I was sitting there talking to my pastor, and I said, you know, I want to bring Bethel to my town of Susanville. And so I'm actually in talks right now of opening up a church that focuses on prison ministry. And what we're going to do is we're going back into the prisons. We're going to teach. We're going to educate. And we're going to bring out those people that want to be preachers and pastors and leaders in our community. And we're going to build them up from inside. And so that's one of the things. That's actually one of my new projects right now is I'm going to take one of these old churches that's been shut down. I want to open it up, and I want to focus solely on prison ministry. I want to bring God back into the prisons. I want to bring back spirituality. I want to bring back awareness, and I want to bring back love. And it's something I'm working on right now.
You might want to connect with International Network of Prison Ministries. The International Network of Prison Ministries has prison organizations and there are churches, but on International Network of Prison Ministry have everything. They have people that help with supportive aftercare resources when they come out. They have people that go into the prisons. They have people that do all these different things, even with jobs and things like that. It's been around for years. I used to belong, and then I stepped down from the organization, and getting back in now is difficult because I don't want to get back into all the things that I was doing before. But check
What's
it out,
called?
International Network of Prison Ministries, INPM.
International Network of Prison Ministries?
Of Prison Ministries, yeah.
Okay.
You might want to connect with them and maybe try to work with them in getting your own started.
Thank you. No, that's great. Yeah, God put that in my heart this last couple, about last month. And I was like, you know, I always appreciated when somebody would come in and give me that love that I was being starved and denied. And so it was just something that, and I got ordained. So, I mean, going into the county jails is going to be cool. But, you know, we need to focus on, we have to reach as many people as we can. With our love and with our reach, because you know what's being done is cool, and the advocates I commend a lot, all of them, for what they're doing, but you know what, we could do more. I think that it's not moving fast enough, and I don't think that it's reaching far enough. So
no.
You know, I'm gonna do my part.
Yeah, if more people get involved, and more people are always joining. I notice that it's expanding. More people are now getting involved. But when you go on Facebook and you post things and you try to bring, you know, recruit others to work with you or help in the prisoners, what happens is they will click on like. We get so many likes, but we're not looking for likes. We're looking for participants. We're looking for advocates. We're looking for people who have a heart, want to see some positive changes, and that's what we're looking at. And unfortunately, we're not getting them fast enough. Or if we are, we're not seeing them as much as we'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people are going to give you a like or dislike, then give you their time and any type of financial help. Them two is almost out the window. They'll just give you a like and keep it moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's just so much.
I know there's one.
Do.
It's the Prison Illegal Services in Massachusetts. I noticed they're always saying they don't have the resources to help a lot of these prisoners, but yet they join these groups that are working on issues like abolishing life without parole or restrictive housing, solitary, whatever. But when you see it, you see all of them. You see four or five people from the same organization, all lawyers, and these are the ones that say they don't have the resources, but they're all joining together to be on these things, to be before the media or to be in these groups. If you really want to help the prisoners, you don't need four or five people in the same meeting. You know, I go on the meeting for my organization, but you have all these people that are saying they don't have the resources, but yet they're all out there trying to be seen and heard while the prisoners are suffering because they don't have the help.
Well, and let's not mention the nonprofits that are padding their pockets still. They're getting all this grant money, and it's going nowhere. It's going into their cars, their homes.
This is a nonprofit. This is a 501c3. That's why I say it's a joke.
Yeah. They're giving all this money, and it's almost as if there's like some underground, this hand, you know, this hand shakes the other hand and this hand passes the buck. I don't know what's going on, but it's they're getting all the, I hear about all this money, but yet the nonprofits that are actually trying to do something are struggling just to get $100. So I don't understand how this process of, they give hundreds of thousands to these nonprofits that are doing nothing. I mean, there's no,
you
I
know, some advocates
data.
Are actually sending me their budget, you know, so I get to see what they do have, even though they're claiming they don't have the funds or the resources. The mm-hmm. money's out there. I get to see it. But they're, at the same time, they're saying they don't have the resources. But yet, if they don't have the resources, I would be booked out. I wouldn't be able to attend these meetings. I haven't been able to attend a lot of these meetings because I have all my cases and my interviewing the volunteers and doing all these things that need to be done. But yet, when people cry, they don't have the resources, but yet they have the time and energy to participate in groups in these meetings. I mean, if you were asked to go and join a meeting to address an issue you're all working on, how many would it take? Would it take, if you had an organization, would you send one or two people, or would you send four or five or six people? When here you're supposed to have no resources?
Yeah. Yeah, if you had no resources, nobody would be going.
Right.
<Got it.
laughs> Nobody at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just needed, as the advocates that are doing something, I appreciate you all. You know, thank you. I mean, like I say, this is near and dear to myself, my heart, and Jerome. And, you know, regardless, we're going to keep it moving. And anyone that wants to jump on board with this and anybody that wants to help for this cause and this movement, you're more than welcome to. We don't discriminate. We're not sitting there, you know, we're not judges or juries. We just want people that are trying to do something for that's beyond themselves, you know. And so I welcome anybody to, you can just reach out. You know, you can hit up me at laurencedrink@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Sparky Lee on Facebook. You can hit me up on Spark Legacy Programs on Facebook. There's just so much that can be done, and we need everybody. We need anybody that's willing to put themselves behind a cause. So that's just, you know, please.
I'll tell you, you guys are awesome, bringing awareness of a lot of things. And I wanted to ask you, can you talk a little bit about the legacy, what is it, the legacy, how did I just miss? What is it?
So legacy stands for learning, education gives air to community and youth, and air stands for accountability, integrity, and responsibility. And
what we do is we
focus on the communities. We want to bring awareness and knowledge and educate them to give them the information necessary for these guys coming, these men and women coming out for a successful and permanent reentry. We want to give them a voice. We want to give them a stake in this investment. And when somebody comes out, that, you know, it's very precious. It's like a child. You know, when you get to see somebody get a job and get their driver's license and go through the steps that every normal American should experience, and when you're part of that and you get to watch this person bloom into being a successful person from what they were, I mean, and you get to watch them heal and you're part of that process, it's a precious and just amazing process. And we want to bring people to be part of that. We want people to experience what few and not many have been able to see. And so this is I've learned that you can sit there and dictate a person's character by the environment. Well, in legacy, we try to change the environment. We want to bring unity. We want to bring safety, security, and most importantly, acceptance and forgiveness. So
that's right.
Exactly. Well, we have like about 8 minutes left, so I'd like to have you guys, Jerome, and also Madeline, are you still on with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just listening to everyone.
I'd like to have you put in some last words again, just a little bit of feedback or a little bit of comments or whatever you want to say to the audience again. What are your thoughts and how you can be reached?
Okay. Basically, everything that was said today in regards to prison reform, not only is it needed, but we need more of the mindset that it was speaking today. You know, this is a, if this is a way of dealing with this whole pandemic, keeping us quarantined, then we also have telecommunication, Zooms, Google Hangouts. We have ways to connect in order to be able to strategize and help to mobilize one another in these other states collectively. That's the only way, because if they're hitting their senators in that state and I'm over here in Missouri and we're all on the same page, even though you have different programs and services, we all have one agenda, and that's to bring the prison reform to our states, not just to talk about it, but be about it. I mean, we see some crazy things right now happening in politics, and right now it's like we pretty much have to go independent and do things ourselves to get the attention and the awareness that is needed on behalf of these inmates, or prisoners, shall I say. The ones I'm most concerned about is that I know for a fact, because I have material evidence dealing with several of the wrongful convictions in my state, and especially right now dealing with the pepper macing, that's a case right now that I'm putting back out there that has been settled through the Missouri Supreme Court, Lawrence versus Bowersock. So it's continuing to happen in the prison. And that's where I will not stop, in helping these families get justice for their loved ones that are incarcerated. Again, anyone that knows of anyone that is an ex-offender that has come out, that don't have any funding, don't know how to go about collecting what was owed to you in regards to the stimulus that was already agreed upon, gone through litigation through a district judge out of California. So I'm here to help anyone that is in need of filling out the 1040 emergency economic impact stimulus payment. I can walk you through the paperwork, or if you have access to a computer, I'm more than willing to give the information of how to go about getting that administered for yourself. Or if you know someone that needs help with that, I can be reached at CoburnEnterprise06@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Madeline Coburn, or LinkedIn, Madeline Coburn. Thank you so much, Leona.
Thank you, Madeline, for coming on the show, and also for being able to give out that information, because there are, I was going to say, there was actually a woman that called me earlier today on behalf of her loved one who never filed for the first stimulus, and she was wondering if it was too late. So I might refer her out that way to just get some information on it.
Sure, definitely. Okay.
And then I want to thank Premier Pharmacy for listening every week, and for all the support you guys give, and especially for my lovely sister-in-law, Christine. Thank you so much.
I'll tell you, you have a lot of supporters, and it's been great. And I'll tell you, even bringing Jerome Eubanks on. Jerome, again, we want to thank you as well. You've been through a lot. Actually, you both have been through a lot, but to be wrongfully convicted and spend those kind of years in prison is – it should not even be tolerated. But I'll tell you, you both learned something from it when you came out. You learned how to expose, disclose. You learned how to talk about the things that the audience and people in the communities need to know about. And you've also been a blessing as far as the programs, the things that you're doing right now, the work that you're both doing. And I thank you both for being on. I really do. I look forward to next week as well.
Always.
So we have 2.5 minutes. Does anyone, Christine, do you want to say anything?
No, I'm just working a lot on Lawrence's website, so he will be having that up in a couple of days. So that way you can better reach him on his Facebook, so it's more easy to communicate. So that is in the works. And I just want to say you guys are awesome and amazing. Keep doing what you're doing. We need all the help that we can get.
Thank you so, so much. And thank you all. And Lawrence, is Samantha on with you?
She's right here. She's in the bedroom.
Oh, okay. We were going to give her a shout-out. But just tell her we hello, and we miss her too.
Hi, Leona.
Hi, Samantha. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. We just wanted to say we missed having you on. You've been on with Lawrence, but we haven't had a chance to get you to say anything. Do you want to say anything to the audience or say anything before we close down? We have another minute left.
Oh, just that we support you guys and everything that you guys are doing. Get through this together.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is just as awesome, and I thank you for being on with us. And, again, we look forward to these shows every Sunday at 3:30 daylight time.
Yeah.
And, again, if any of you out in the audience listening, if any of you want to participate in any of these things that Lawrence drank, that Jerome Eubanks and Madeline Coburn have been talking about, and also Christine, please, 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 let them know, get in contact with them, ask how you can help. They're on Facebook, they're on the Internet, they're all over the place, so it won't be hard to find any of them. And just ask how you can be of help, because with your help, we can move things so much faster. We can clean out these prisons. We don't have to have mass incarceration. We don't have to have life without parole. We don't have to have people, victims, becoming offenders only to be victims again. And we need to help these people. This is America.
Sure,
this is the United States. This is not
a place. And make sure you go get out Jerome Eubanks' books. Yeah.
Pardon?
Oh, yeah, yeah. if y'all haven't already got it or heard about it, my new book, Guilty Until Proven Innocent, When a Woman Cries Rape, The Life Story of Ronald Eubanks. All the money is going to charity. I donated it all. I don't want no parts of the money.
How in the world could you keep that a secret all through this show? 90 minutes of it and you never mentioned anything. But
I'm just a private person. I just want to help people. I mean, I don't, you know.
It's called humility, and I thank you. I thank you.
We love
but you.
You
must talk about it the next time we have the show. Talk more about that, because I would really like to know more about it. So, everyone, want to thank you for being on with us. We want to thank, again, we want to thank Lawrence Bank. We want to thank Jerome Eubanks. We want to thank Samantha, Lawrence's wife, and we want to thank Christine, his sister-in-law, and we want to thank Madeline Coburn for being on with us, and we look forward to all of you next week. And we are going to be closing this episode for today. And again, thank you so much, all of you, for being on with us.
Thank you. God bless you all.
Have a great evening.
God bless you.
Everyone. Bye-bye.